My bad, I don't know why I'm up here.
In Liam Gallagher style.
Yeah. Have we started? Should I set the timer? All right. Dan, I'd like you to explain to all of the listeners and anyone who might be watching this why we have SM, supposed to be a podcast. We've got a studio podcast. We're a studio. We're supposed to be, you know, promoting the studio. And we've got fucking SM 58s.
Best mic in the business, mate. give me full 58s. I'll make you a record.
I think that this isn't sending out a good message to people who are going to come and record here.
No, it does. It does. It speaks to our skills. The reason is, when I was checking the audio back last week, the M88s...
Good mic, mate.
Yeah. Do a lot with that. Give me four M88s. I'll make you a record.
I'll make you a record with that's very muddy, with not a lot of top ending. Actually, that's not true.
No. M88s, mate. It's great all rounder. Great all rounder.
Do you know when I see M88s, do you know what I think of? I think of Phil Collins. Whenever you see Phil Collins from like late Genesis to today.
Yeah.
Always
that's
an M88
on stage mic, is it?
On stage mic.
That makes good sense, because
even at Live Aid.
Further to my point, even at Live Aid, did he play drums at Live Aid?
No, he played. He did a solo piano show, but in both in the UK, and then went on Concord. What a legend! He went on Concord for the starving children to do another set, another piano set, and then he did that. Oh, do you know? I watched the other day. He did that set with Led Zeppelin. And it's like this, like one. It's absolutely terrible. It was like
Phil Collins with Led Zeppelin.
Yeah,
I don't want to see that.
It's not good. No one came out good. But his solo piano thing, particularly at Wembley, he does Against All Odds, and it's really good. And he's got an M88. That's my point.
Okay. In our post match debrief last week, we decided we were going to explain a bit more about who people are.
Well, we don't need to explain Phil Collins. Everyone knows who Phil Collins is.
Are we going to assume people know what Concord is?
Yeah.
There could be young people.
Anyway, going back to it. So why have we got... Explain yourself.
Well,
why do we have
SM58? The M88 is so directional that I was kind of moving around the mic a little bit. And I could hear my audio kind of dipping in and out.
Okay.
Fortunately, my plug-in of the week again
is
We're not giving Adobe any more props. Well, no, I can shit on Adobe as well. Don't worry. And if there's any graphic designers kicking around, they can all shit on Adobe as well.
Okay, no, I don't want to shit on them.
But yeah, that thing is just, it just saves so much time.
Okay.
Anyway, welcome to the podcast, everyone.
Welcome.
But I thought you were going to shake my hand there.
I was just gesticulating.
Don't fucking touch me. What's been happening at the studio this week, Matthew?
We decided we're not going to talk about artists, right, that are coming in to respect their privacy.
Exactly. But we could say that they are, I did look this up actually, at least two times Mercury nominated artist we've got in.
And they are in for the next couple of weeks. That's been really good.
Yeah.
I'm still in mixed land.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been going well, I think.
There you shall remain forever.
There I shall remain until the end of the month.
Until mix final 27. Last underscore, this is the one.
This is the one.
We also had a...
No, I've got... About that, sorry, I'm just going to... I've got a writing session this week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really nervous because I haven't done a writing session for like about 4 weeks.
Interesting.
Do you ever wonder that? Do you think, God, can I still do this? Can I still bloody do this? When you get in one mode...
I understand the feeling, yeah. So
I know I can do it.
Well, it's just when you're in your stride, like tomorrow I'm doing a kind of a pre-production session with an artist. And yeah, I've been studio managing type admining stuff for like the past week. To be honest, I didn't actually have any sessions last week because there was all sorts of other interesting things going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I need to just remind myself, you know, like...
Can I ask you a question, Dan, for the listeners? Yeah. What does a pre-production session mean to you, Dan?
What does it mean to me? Well, it means it's preparation to make... Is that someone coming in, by the way?
No.
It can mean all sorts of things.
That's our engineer has arrived.
Is that the engineer?
Yeah. Should we just carry on?
Let's just carry on. All right. I did warn him.
Did you? Okay.
He might come out anyway.
Okay.
Come and join us, Nick. No, don't. Pre-production can mean, it can mean starting the record, obviously, because you've got to be ready at any moment to capture something, which is going to be the main thing. But in terms of what I'm doing tomorrow with this artist, it's to hear that. So I haven't actually met her before.
Okay, that's obviously the big one.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think the most important thing is just to have a coffee and a chat and maybe listen to some kind of references or whatever's sounding exciting that day.
Can I ask you a question on that?
Yeah.
This is something I've been thinking about. How much onus, or before you make a record, how much time do you spend listening to reference tracks, and how helpful do you think that is?
I think so. Do you know what I've tended to do lately is, like, people often send a playlist.
Yes.
And what I will do is I'll listen to that playlist just while I'm going about my business.
Yeah.
A few times through.
Yeah.
What I don't really want to be doing personally is, like, listening to the demos at the same time, or kind of
the artist demos.
Yeah, kind of like muddling them up too much, but it's just to sort of get a very broad sense. I feel like where reference tracks come in, so they're useful at the start of the process, and they're useful through the process if someone's trying to they're a very good communication tool.
Yes.
So if someone's going like, when we get to the bridge, I just want to have this sense of it opening out. You know, the way in that Kurt Vile track where, probably right. bad example, but that sort of thing, you know, yeah. and you're like, there's this way that I want it to feel like a something.
Yeah.
And because it's music and there's, we don't really spend much time sitting around looking at dots on a sheet, score, you know, because else that doesn't tell you anything about the texture of the...
Yes, of course, of course.
The words don't... So anyway, they're useful for just going like, have a listen to this. And then you listen and you go, okay, right. And I find sometimes I can figure out exactly what's going on there, you know? So it'd be like, oh, it's a delay on a...
Right.
Doesn't mean you should copy it. But it's a jumping off point.
It's a jumping off point. I agree. I mean, I found that maybe this just speaks to me, but sometimes I've got a bit lost in references,
mm-hmm.
particularly at the beginning of a session before you start something, and an artist sends you something that's got like Justin Bieber, Kraftwerk, and some Bach, and you're just like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
This is, you know, but I like what you said there about it just being very broad.
Yeah.
It being, oh, you know, I'd really like the, and it's more actually, rather than the sonics, it's more of like a conceptual start.
Yeah.
I really like the melody, the way that this, in this Bach piece, the way that this melody is moving over this bass line that's quite static or something.
Yeah.
It's like very, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And it saves you, it can save time and not, you know, saving time in the studio is it's a useful thing. Sometimes it's good to dwell on stuff, but it's just it's a shortcut to actually communicating something directly.
Yeah, I think it also as well at the beginning of a process, it gives you an idea of the artist's taste.
Uh-huh.
And I always say this though. I might start this when you first start working with an artist. Sometimes certain artists I've worked with only communicate things they hate. It's like, I really don't like. Whatever, yeah. And it can be whatever. I really don't like dry vocals. I don't like snare drums that are too loud, whatever.
Yep.
And that's actually really useful.
Yeah, well, it defines parameters, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, okay, so you don't like, you know, synths or you don't, whatever it is.
Yeah.
maybe there should be two playlists, right? There should be a playlist of all the favorite, and then just 10 songs that you fucking hate.
This should be...
Well,
it's not even ones you hate. It's just like this record involves none of this nonsense. You know?
Exactly. No, well, that's the... God, do you know what? Actually, thinking about it, I'd quite like to put together 10 songs I absolutely detest.
Yeah, sure.
As a, like, you know, I don't want anything to do with this.
And then 10 worst songs.
10 of the worst songs ever.
I think that would be harder than you imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, I've thought of three already that will go in there.
Okay.
But I don't want to, I don't want this podcast to be negative, so I'm not going to say what they are.
Yeah. I don't mind.
Just in case people like Top Loader.
Oh no, he didn't.
I'm joking.
Yeah. So that's my take on reference tracks.
Okay.
Anything to add to that?
No. Just what I said. You know, I think that, like, yeah, they're a good overall thing.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got sidelined. What were we talking about? Oh yeah, so you've got pre-production this week.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah. What's on the cards for you, sir?
Like I said, more mixing. Time for Matt. Oh yeah, and I've got a writing session with a new artist. Do you know what? On that, you know, I said I was slightly nervous.
Mm.
Nothing makes me more. I don't know if we've spoken about this in other podcasts. Nothing makes me more nervous than a day one writing session.
Right.
I get nervous.
I don't really do that gig myself.
You should do them.
So, well,
and get nervous.
Sure.
Why would I want to be nervous? And I know that we've spoken about this, but I think the reason that writing sessions are nerve wracking is that you might get nothing.
Yeah.
You might not get anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the day one for a writing session, you've got to do a lot. You've got to kind of get to know the person. You've got to feel comfortable.
Yeah.
Get to know what they like. But I think I get nervous about them and they're vulnerable because you have to be prepared to fail in front of somebody. Like to just lob in an idea that might be awful. And, you know, I'm pretty good at that. I'm pretty good at lobbing in a bad idea.
You're one of the best in the business. Speaking about bad records, you know.
No, or, you know, to lob in an idea that the artist really doesn't like. And I think, like, when you're working with an artist that you know, it's very, you sort of know that there's certain areas that they're just, you just want to steer away from conceptually, lyrically, in any way.
Yeah,
but when you're day one with a new artist, and you know, you can lob in five ideas in a row that just meet with, like, oh God, that's not very good.
Yeah.
And that's hard. That can be hard. And it doesn't do your confidence any good.
Yeah. I mean, I've got a couple of things to say on that. Although I don't do writing sessions myself. I mean, it happens sometimes, you know.
Yes.
But I'm not really in the business of starting with nothing. But what I was going to say is that preparedness to fail in front of an artist, I think it's a skill which exists throughout music production, you know. Not necessarily mixing, you know. I think a good mix often involves trying stuff out that might turn out to be terrible.
Just to pull you up on that there, mate.
Okay.
I think failing is totally relevant to mixing.
It is, but
you could deliver a mix that the artist can't stand.
Yeah, but is that failure? I think it's a slightly different thing. What I'm getting at is that in the heat of the moment, during the creative, obviously the heat mixing is part of the creative process,
sure.
But it's a little bit more of a tempered, because you're taking the complete picture and you're refining it.
Yes.
Sometimes you're removing it. Sometimes you're taking brave decisions to remove elements.
Yes.
Or add stuff in.
Yeah.
But in the flow of, like, creating the production of something, I think that's the time when it's that skill of, like, hey, I've got an idea, let's try it out.
Yes.
And then you try it out and you go, wow, that was terrible, you know.
But that can still happen with mixing. I guess that
it can, but you just revert, you just get rid of it.
You just get rid of it. Exactly.
The stakes aren't quite the same. It's quite hard to define why, actually.
I would say that the stakes are different because where as soon as you're dealing with a production, so somebody's written a song and they bring it to you, put up, and I'd say the same for mixing, you're dealing with very quite defined parameters.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas when you're writing, the parameters are as limitless, wide as they can possibly
yeah,
be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you, as we, and you have to try things.
And you have to try things. And I also think that you are, when you're writing, you're really the only thing you're dealing with is an idea in its rawest form,
mm-hmm.
particularly because the way in which I like to write, that depends, but my favorite way of writing is not to put anything into the computer mm-hmm. or the DAW until you've sort of got
yeah.
the song pretty...
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how people do this. Well, I have done it, but I don't... It's not my go-to. It's when you sort of make a backing track and a beat and
right.
then try and write a song over it. That just doesn't... I don't understand how...
See, I think those...
I don't understand how people do that.
On the occasions that... I have done writing with artists. That's actually been much more the vibe.
Which is cool. And that's how Bowie wrote most of his stuff. You
yeah,
know,
yeah,
low
yeah.
onwards.
Just, I mean,
so, and it's, I'm not saying it can't be fruitful. I just feel that the main focus is the melodic focus.
Yeah.
And if you're writing to a backing track that's fixed, you're at the mercy of that. You can't change it.
You're constraining the chord structure.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the
yeah.
tempo might not be right or...
Yeah.
You know...
What's...
Well, I know.
If you're working in... Well, sometimes the tempo is not right when you get to the mix, of course.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But,
yeah,
you know, at least if you're working in... if you're working in Ableton or something, for example,
yes.
where you can just
it's
have
great.
It roll round.
Yes.
And you can adjust the tempo on the fly. That's
but just to finish
fun.
My point about taking things... not taking things personally, but...
Mm.
I think that's where the writing session is vulnerable because you're basically just dealing with ideas
mm-hmm.
and you should be
in quite a loose kind of flow state and,
yeah.
and very open to letting words and feelings and things. Well, there's potentially, you know, if you're making a feel good hit of the summer, obviously
yeah,
that's kind of a different thing.
What I do. No,
but,
I'm joking.
But you're often involved in writing quite emotionally, I don't really like using the word emotional music, but
I make emotional music.
But you make emotional music, you know. Well, no, just like emotional is one of those words. It's like it describes something, and it doesn't really describe
sure.
anything, you know, because emotions can mean happy or yeah. or sad or angry or longing.
Yeah.
But is that accurate characterization of? I mean, obviously, mate.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You made bangers
sure,
as that, well.
If that's what you, yeah, I'll take
yeah.
that. Whatever.
Yeah.
yeah.
Which is like it's yeah. So that there's an intimacy there.
Totally.
Which is perhaps not like when we had a when we sort of had a writing camp. Some point this year,
the Sony one,
the Gen. We haven't had a Sony Ryan camp.
We did. We have. So we had Sony Publishing.
That was Universal.
Was it? Sorry, I knew it was one of them.
Yeah, yeah. Universal Publishing.
Sorry, God. Camp. Yeah, that's
a lot of the briefs were. I mean, the briefs were to. They were almost like vibes.
Vibes.
Yeah, vibes because they weren't. The briefs were not to to create a 3-minute song as such. They were more to create music to accompany things.
Yeah.
In like TV shows and such like
right,
rather than to
yeah.
sort of release because it's publishing music essentially. So its function is not to
yes.
to sort of accumulate streams.
It's to accompany
yeah
a vibe
yeah yeah exactly but that's and it's no less valid
no
you know?
Totally not
but
no.
I wasn't in the room for any of them.
You weren't invited. I wasn't invited either,
but you know but the most of the sessions kind of involved a lot of excitement and kind of
right
cheering and jumping around, you know, and that's inherent in the music, you know, and you can hear that in
yeah
in what was created.
I think positivity is the hardest thing to do in music, in that it's very difficult to make something really positive that isn't really cloying and cheesy. And
right, okay, yeah.
I just think about, I know we talked about this a couple of podcasts back about my kids. So my daughter loves anything positive, basically.
Yeah,
upbeat music. And one of her favorite songs, and it seems one of the world's favorite songs, is Don't Stop Me Now by Queen.
Okay, yeah.
Because it's just like relentlessly positive.
Yeah.
And I think...
And incredibly silly.
It's silly. Like, it's like very silly.
Like, like most of the upbeat Queen stuff is quite silly.
It's silly. But it's fun.
Yeah.
It's super fun.
And it's authentic, isn't it?
Not
that I could imagine, not that I could even conceive of Freddie Mercury recording a boring vocal, you know?
The vocal is really good.
Exactly.
The vocal is good in that it's like, it's one of those vocals as well. Like, I've witnessed someone try to karaoke it a couple of times and it's just really high. It's really high. And also that vocal is bone dry and loud.
Yeah. Well, it's the pinnacle of the what album's that on? Don't Stop Me Now. It's in the 70s anyway, isn't it?
It's late 78, something like that.
It's Queen Greatest Hits 1, I think.
It certainly is.
Of the three gigantic greatest hits albums that Queen
had. I wouldn't call Greatest Hits 3 gigantic.
Well, Greatest Hits 3 feels very long. because it's not the finest Queen material around. I can't even think of, but anyway, yeah, that really dry 70s production. How are we doing for time, by the way?
How are we doing for time?
I feel like we've
got 8 minutes and 42 seconds left.
That dry 70s production is very striking.
It's very striking.
Particularly, I think it's like Sheer Heart Attack, where, you know, whether or not there may have been some reverb available in the studio, it was certainly kept well in the cupboard. You know, that plate reverb was not plugged in.
At
any stage.
But going back to Don't Stop Me Now, what were we saying? Yes, I think, I always think that Freddie stayed up for 3 days doing low speed and partying and then wrote that song. It feels like it's a very genuine... God, I just had a fucking great weekend.
It's authenticity, isn't it? It's authenticity.
And I think that those positive songs, like, you know, that elbow one.
Looking like a beautiful day. Throw those curtains.
That's just a banger.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's positive. It's not cheesy. Beautiful day.
It is a little bit cheesy.
It's a bit cheesy, but
dude,
it's not.
When I saw Elbow live, I can't remember why I saw Elbow live. I think it was at like the Roundhouse. That's the song where the balloons got released.
Of course. You know,
where the big net of balloons.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is, whether you think it's cheesy or not, those songs are hard to write.
Yeah.
And they're, and I don't know why. I think, because I think for every, there's 100 sad songs that connect to people for every one of those.
Yeah.
Seemingly. Yeah. Happy by Pharrell.
Happy by Pharrell is really cheesy. It works.
It is a bit cheesy,
it was written for a film about penguins, I think, wasn't it? Wasn't it written for Happy Feet?
Is it Minions? Yeah, maybe it's, I don't know, but when I listen to it.
Oh yeah, Happy Feet.
When it comes on a wedding or something, it's just like, this is, people love it.
Yeah. And I don't think even that, like, if you zoom in on it, the vocal performance is not that, it's real, it's authentic. It's not, you know, Pharrell's not like a power rock singer.
No.
But.
He's a great singer though, Pharrell.
He's a great singer. It's the vocal's not that good on Happy. It sounds a little bit.
Define good though. You mean it's not pitchy?
It feels a bit weak.
Oh no, come on, man.
It does.
I won't have that.
Trust me.
I won't have that.
Go and listen to Happy. It doesn't feel as sort of when you zoom in on the details of it.
Okay.
It kind of falls apart a little bit.
But
it's a vibe.
But I know it's a huge vibe.
It's,
but I know we've talked about this a lot about the certain pop hits, you just sort of, when we talked about this a little bit last week, music being omnipresent, so you don't really, you know, and you can say that for Happy, it's just everywhere. You know, everyone knows that song.
Yeah.
And you don't really focus in on it.
And I've recorded the Ukulele Orchestra of Great Britain doing a cover of that song. That really drills into the details.
I feel like that was the defining version of that song.
I think so, yeah. I'm not even sure, they're such an odd band. I don't think most of their stuff's on Spotify.
That's a shame.
Because a lot of their
A
lot of their audience buys CDs still.
Do they?
Their business model is very unusual in that a lot of their, let's say, most of their audience are perhaps 50 and over. And they go and see them at for the spectacle, and it is a fun spectacle.
I
to
bet
be honest,
it's really
I would
fun.
Go and see them.
But anyway,
going back on track, we're saying
that like there's a lot of pop hits that we've listened, and then you listen to the vocal and you go, God, that vocal's actually like you assume it's going to be really polished. I think that's what you're saying about Pharrell. Massive hit. You assume everything's going to be really polished. And you're like, shit, actually, it isn't.
It's
a vibe.
Yeah, there's not... I'll tell you what it might be, actually. It's not that compressed.
Okay.
Unlike almost every pop vocal of the last forever. You know, it's not squished right up in your face.
There's a couple of songs that have come out over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I like compression. I like compression. But
call him Mr. Compression.
But you hear the vocal and you're just like, fucking hell. I mean, that is just like...
Yeah.
Squished.
Yeah, I don't generally enjoy that. Unless it's like System of a Down or something where you need to sort of... Which, if it's heavy music, it feels... Well, it's technically necessary most of the time because you've got to get the vocal over the top of
other shit.
Guitars. Lots of guitars.
Cymbals, guitars, cymbals, drums.
You gotta find a way through to actually get the vocal heard. But generally it feels a bit like gives me the sense that the song's trying to squeeze out a the song's constipated. You know.
That's it.
Have you checked out this is relevant. Have you checked out the latest Taylor Swift drop of... she's obviously been re-recording all her albums.
I did have a little cheeky listen to the 1989
reissue. I was just curious. I was let me check out... what the heck does... Shake it... Why did I just censor myself?
Shake it off.
What the heck? What the gosh darn heck does... Does the re-recorded version of Shake It Off sound like?
The answer is not that much different.
It's very, very similar.
Yeah.
But I don't think it has that authenticity.
Really?
And maybe I find it quite hard to not listen to those re-records, so what they are, with a critical ear. Because I'm trying to loop back to the start of this episode, actually.
Yes.
It's capturing those ideas and kind of freely allowing things to happen. And obviously, if you're trying to remake a mega hit...
Yeah.
Surely all you're going to be doing is listening very, very carefully to the original and trying to match the sound.
Because
can't use any of the original sounds because they're all owned by...
Someone else.
The demon head master or whoever he is. You know, Mr. Big.
The man.
The man, that's it. Yeah, so the man owns those. And I'm all for trying to screw over people who are exploiting your music.
Yeah.
But it just doesn't... It doesn't quite... Like, the vibe is not... It's not right. The vibe's not there. And I don't know... If it's because with mega hits, you hear them over and over and over and over and over, and whether you are tuned into it or not, you get very familiar with every twist and turn of that. And the minute something slightly different, because it is all just slightly different.
It's slightly different. I mean, I think if Shake It Off came on at a wedding at 11 o'clock, and I'd been drinking all day, and then... During the last chorus, someone shouted in my ear, "Which version is this?" I probably couldn't say. I love Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
But I'm not like a mega fan, and it tends to be stuff, particularly the 1989 stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is stuff that comes on in my kitchen when my daughter dances around.
Yeah.
I love it. It's great.
Which version does she prefer? Wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
I would just be interested to see if I might just be kind of hearing what I expect to hear, you know, or whether it's just like maybe it's just doesn't pop as much because it's there can't be any spontaneity in the process of it's not even a cover version. If you're going to go into a studio and record a cover version with an artist, you want to keep... Oh, time's up. Just to finish.
Save it for next week, mate.
I've started, so I'll finish.
Go on.
If you're going into a studio to record a cover version with someone, you're being faithful to the original, but you're also deliberately making it different, you know, and it might be very similar, it might be very different, but it's not the same artist. It's not the same vocal and whatnot. Some food for thought for you there.
Cue music. We haven't even done plug-in of the week.
No one cares. We don't need to do plug-in of the week every week.
All music recommendations.
We'll do plug-in of the year.